Mama, I'm Gosia's Carrot, and this is the Firestarter Mom podcast, the show where we feature inspiring conversations with Firestarter moms and experts on motherhood identity shift, finding our inner fire back, and feeling adequate and empowered as moms and women. Welcome! Are you a mom who's been yearning to rediscover your inner fire and embark on a new career path? Feeling torn between motherhood and new ambitions? If you are considering a fresh start and finding you again beyond being a mom, this episode is for you. Joining me today is Rachel Schofield, a seasoned journalist turned career and personal development coach. With a background of 20 years at the BBC, Rachel brings a unique perspective on navigating career transitions, embracing change, and crafting fulfilling paths in today's rapidly evolving world. She is the author of the great insightful book called The Career Change Guide, 5 Steps to Finding Your Dream Job. In this episode, we delve deep into Rachel's own journey, exploring her transition into motherhood and her subsequent shift from a prominent media career to coaching. Rachel discusses how our identities evolve through motherhood and professional life, offering practical strategies to reignite your professional self. She busts myths around finding passion-based work and gives practical tips to exploring new directions, even with limited time. Discover the power of coaching in uncovering your strengths and desires, making career change more rewarding. By the end of this episode, you will have a newfound perspective on the journey of career change and the tools to navigate it effectively. Let's get started. Hello, Rachel. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be with you.
Yes, very excited about our conversation today. It's about career change, it's about mindset behind this. But I feel, especially for moms who are listening, it is very kind of current topic because motherhood brings so many changes to our life, changes in personal identity, in professional identity, in how we view ourselves and what really sets us on fire and finding that inner fire. So I'm really, really excited to dive in there. But before we start, I like to ask, how are you feeling today? Well, what are you up to today, for example?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Yes, what am I feeling today? I'm feeling a little bit like I've got a lot in my head. So I've worked with 2 clients this morning, both of whom are thinking about their careers. And, you know, as the coach, obviously it's my job to create the space and create a structure. But inevitably, what happens is, you know, someone comes with a lot of confusion and muddle, and it's quite hard to hold that space and to not take it all on. So when I come out of sessions, sometimes there's still a lot buzzing around in my head where I'm reflecting on the challenges they have or what they might want to do or what I noticed, where they're meeting resistance, where they're excited. And so, yeah, in that coaching space, sometimes it's hard to release that. But other than that, I'm feeling good. Thank you. It's a nice day. I need to get a bit of fresh air later. That's always important, isn't it, to keep us grounded. But I'm in good shape.
Oh, great. I can see your energy. I can sense it. Very vibrant, very dynamic, very positive. So that's really great. And I can tell that you find your coaching work rewarding and you genuinely enjoy it. Right. So, okay, Rachel, let's dive in and talk about your specifically identity change. We look at personal and professional identity. You became mom some time ago. How long was it ago?
Yeah, a lot. It feels that was such a great question reflecting on the changes. I thought, gosh, I'm going back quite a long way. So I'm 47. So we have 2 daughters. So my oldest daughter is 19 and the other one is 16. So yeah, it does feel like I was diving back into the mists of time. And I think for me, actually, so I got married at 26 and had my first daughter. Is this the right way around? Yeah, I had my first daughter at 28. And actually, I think by modern standards, that feels quite early. So when I was reflecting on how my identity changed, I was one of the first, in fact, I think I was the first of my group of girlfriends to have a child. And I think that for me was quite challenging, actually, because I was something of the kind of trailblazer into becoming a mum. So I had nothing to really work on or to work from in seeing it in other people. And I think what surprised me when I became a mum was how blindsiding it was, actually, and how challenging, exciting, of course, and wonderful and a real privilege. And it's not a privilege everybody gets. But definitely it was a bit like, you know, you're hit by a car in a way. It was that sense of, gosh, I didn't know it was going to be this difficult. Partly at a practical level, because suddenly you're sleep deprived and trying to breastfeed and, you know, just addled and knackered. But yeah, the identity, I hadn't seen anyone go through that. And I think I remember finding it quite challenging. And I don't get me wrong, I was in good shape. I was very lucky, didn't have any postnatal depression or anything like that. But I remember friends coming to visit and saying, oh, wonderful. Oh, how amazing it must be. And I remember just thinking, it's not that amazing. It's quite tiring. And I feel a bit not myself. And I feel a bit like I've started something that really is a big deal. So I think in those early years, definitely, it was getting to grips with the idea that things had shifted and my identity had shifted personally. I think that sense of, gosh, where does this put my relationship with my husband or my partner, whoever it is? And gosh, I'm now responsible for a small person. And now I've been given this new identity as someone's mum. And does that threaten to subsume my identity? You know, we all laugh. It's that frustrating thing when you're picking up kids from the school gate, you suddenly become, you don't have a name anymore. You're just such and such is mum and things like that. So all of that from a personal point of view, particularly in those early years, and not, you know, my kids now are big and it's really changed, but definitely it challenged my identity personally. And yeah, professionally, I think as well, it throws up different challenges at different times. I think initially you can feel a bit torn, and this isn't a one size fits all, is it? You know, some people feel differently, but I remember feeling a bit torn of, gosh, am I less professional now because I feel a little bit distracted by the fact I've got little ones at home? Or on the other hand, sometimes you feel empowered because you're like, I've got little ones at home, but work now feels more important because I want to reinforce my professional identity. I want to lean into that because it's an important part of me. And similarly, you know, sometimes as our kids get older, there's a re-energizing of our professional identity of like, great, my kids are bigger. This is my time again. I'm going to really embrace my ambition. So I think that's a very long way of saying, I think your identity keeps shifting and keeps moving depending on what stage you're at as a mum, and also who you are as a person and your own individual circumstances and personality.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I wonder, when you reflect on that time, did you, in your perception of yourself, did you have that kind of solid sense of identity? Or you now, when you reflect, think that, oh gosh, I really didn't know who I was. I know now. Or you don't have that?
That's a really good question. And I think I was quite lucky. I don't know, is it luck? Is it upbringing? Is it our own way we are just wired as humans? I think probably I did have quite a secure sense of my own identity. I had a very happy upbringing, not that necessarily people who don't know who they are, but I think I'd always felt quite secure in who I was, with of course the normal teenage wobbles and angst and things. But I think even at 28 I did have quite a strong sense of self and a kind of inner, I don't know if it's confidence, but an inner sort of quiet and calm and sense of I'm comfortable with who I am. But nevertheless, you know, I did have definite moments of wobble as a mum, but I think I had a strong starting point, which was good. So it didn't kind of throw me off totally.
What do you, as a mum, what do you find most beautiful actually about motherhood for yourself?
Oh, I think that's a lovely question. I think it just exposes you to so many new experiences. That yes, while we tend to look to the challenging things, the converse of that, of course, is for every challenge, there's a massive amount of growth and learning about yourself and about the world and about human relationships and about how people work and how things work. You know, at a very practical level, you learn a huge number of new skills. And at a interpersonal level as well, you learn what it is to manage other people's expectations, to prioritize other people's needs sometimes above your own, but also to realize that that can't happen all the time, even as a mum, and it can lead us astray if we try and put everybody's needs above ours, of course, which is why sometimes motherhood can feel really challenging. So I think there's this beauty as you relax into it. That doesn't happen that fast, does it? But that you realize how much you are growing as a person, how you're tapping into parts of yourself and your understanding of kind of the human condition that you perhaps didn't know about before.
Yeah, it is an amazing journey. And as I mentioned to you before the show, I feel that there is so much ahead of me. Like my daughter is under 2 years old now. And I feel that, yeah, I am beyond that, obviously, initial months and stage of when she was infant. And now it's like I am a mom of a toddler. And then you become mom of a school age kids and then mom of teenagers. So that identity is heavily shaped, obviously, around your stage you are currently at in motherhood. But looking at your professional identity, because you had quite a like public facing role as a BBC presenter, and then at one point you decided about your very own career change. I wonder if you can just tell us a little bit more about this, and most importantly, what did you have to shift internally to enable that career change for yourself?
Yeah. So I spent 20 years pretty much at the BBC. So I went to university, I did modern languages, decided I really was interested in journalism. I'd done a bit of student radio. And I then did a postgraduate qualification in broadcast journalism just for a year. Started with the BBC in local news, local radio, which is often the route in. You kind of cut your teeth in the regions and then worked my way up through Radio 4, Woman's Hour, You and Yours, ended up on the BBC News Channel. So I went from being a reporter to being a presenter for many years. So, yeah, and definitely I then, when I was in my early 40s, even though there were lots of elements of my job that I really did enjoy, and I felt very proud to work for the BBC. You know, it's a well-respected organisation. It had given me a lot of fun and a lot of interest over the years. But I think I just realised that I was ready for something different. But the shift, the mindset shift that comes with that, particularly if you've done one thing for a long time, is really big. It's challenging to consider a career change, however much you think you want it. And however much you feel like, oh, I'm ready for something different. I've had enough. I mean, I wasn't in that space of I hate this or anything. Mm-hmm. Whereas some people are much more able to kind of move because they're unhappy. But I just thought I want something different. But there was a lot of mindset work that has to go with that, because you're releasing, you know, coming back to this issue of identity, you're releasing in a way an identity that had served me so well for 20 years. And that also, if I'm honest, had been a source of status for me, not in a huge way. I presented the news, but I'm not Fiona Bruce. You know, no, people didn't stop me in the street. I wasn't well known, but it had a currency to say, oh, I work for the BBC, I present on the news channel. And to be ready to let go of that was hard, even though I was wanting to do something different. I think saying to yourself, I'm prepared to adopt a new identity, to experiment with a new identity, to say, I'm no longer this, I'm thinking about being that. Gosh, the internal work, the challenge to our own sense of self that goes with that is really tricky.
I find this actually fascinating. I do feel that career change starts in mindset, because there are so many beliefs and perceptions that actually build up in us. And what I actually really loved about your book that you wrote about career change was just that you pointed at certain beliefs that I didn't even realize that I've built, especially around building passion-based business and certain expectations around what sort of business or career is worth having, because maybe if it's not passion-based, then it's not even worth pursuing. But actually, we really challenged many beliefs I had around that, but we will get them. But going back to that internal work, what do you feel was the most difficult really to let go? We talk about identity, but is it about the achievement? Is it about sense of importance? For example, you built around the job, sense of maybe recognition you had from others?
Yeah, I think you're really onto something there. I think it's not the case with every career change, because obviously there's a spectrum and some career changes are more of a gentle pivot rather than a massive reinvention. But I think the further up that spectrum you go towards a reinvention, yes, I think it's a challenge, because in a way your brain can tell you that you are throwing something away and you are starting from scratch. You know, you can feel it diminished by it in a way. You can feel like I'm making myself smaller. Why am I becoming a beginner at something again? Why am I stepping into an area I'm unfamiliar with when I have all this credibility and status? You know, whether you're a journalist or an accountant or a lawyer or a vet or a graphic designer, you know, you're known for something and you have years of experience, and that feels valuable. And yeah, I think what you're letting go of sometimes is the idea that is, then you have to accept that that's not wasted. You're not throwing stuff away. You're just taking all of these elements of yourself and almost just constructing a different pattern with them. I think that can really help. We tend to think, oh, that was the old me and I'm devising a new me. And I think that can be very unhelpful as a mindset, because you can suddenly feel very kind of naked and back at the beginning of your journey if you say this is all new to me totally and I don't know what I'm doing and I'm starting again. That can feel troubling and make you feel like you're not up to it. Whereas I think one of the shifts is thinking I'm not starting from scratch, albeit I'm having to learn new things, I'm stepping into a new industry or sector, but I'm bringing with me all of these skills and aptitudes and strengths and experience that I have, and I'm refocusing it, I'm using it in a different way. And again, that can be hard because sometimes you can't always see how you're doing that. You don't think, well, if I was, you know, if I once was a secretary and I'm becoming a vet, surely the two things aren't linked, you know, oh gosh, I am throwing one away and stepping into another. But actually, if you look hard enough, and it's one of the things I do with my clients, you do see all through your life these kind of threads, whether they're interests you've always had or skills you've always demonstrated, strengths people have always commented on, things you've always loved doing, that do show up all the way through. And I think it's about trying to create a narrative where you're not totally reinventing yourself, you're not starting again, but you are just taking all of these wonderful bits of yourself and reconfiguring them. And that's a strong position, not a weak position.
So I understand that when you reflect on your journey of shifting from BBC presenter to a career coach, you had to first look at how you perceive that change and then challenge what needs to be challenged. Is that the kind of way you approach it when you work with your clients as well?
With my clients, it's a real mixture of practical exploration around, also a lot of reflection about building your self-awareness and mindset work as well, when you hit the little confidence gremlins that start shouting in your ear. So I guess for my clients, where we tend to start, and this is a very well-known career model, I'm not laying claim to reinventing the wheel, is starting thinking, well, who am I and what do I want? And initially that can feel like a really big question. You're like, oh my gosh, I don't know. I know what I don't want. A lot of people are like, I don't want this and I hate that and this bit of my job is awful. But when you say, well, what do you want? They're like, oh, I'm not sure. Some days I think it's this and other days I think that. And of course, what I really want is utterly impossible. All of these things start coming in. So the space you often work with people in is initially that sense of, okay, well, let's look at different elements of you. And there are different pieces of the career change puzzle that are often valuable to draw on. So looking at things like, well, what are your strengths and skills? What are you really good at? And also, which of the things that you're good at do you really enjoy that you could potentially take somewhere else? So really looking back over your career and your life to date and thinking, what stands out? What makes me happy? When am I fulfilled? When am I in flow? What are the tasks that people give me that I love doing and would happily do all day, that I would really miss if I didn't get to do them? So thinking about your strengths and skills, thinking a lot, and this is where identity, I think, comes in, and is at that slightly deeper level, thinking about your values, thinking about what's the deeper driver for me of a career? What is work about for me? Is it about status? Is it about wealth? Is it about fun and adventure? Is it about collaboration and teams? Is it about achievement or contribution? So all of these kind of words, thinking about what matters to me about my work, because that gives you the slightly deeper meaning. And we also look at what people are interested in, inside and outside work. We can talk in a minute about whether passion has a place in career redesign. And of course, we look at the practical stuff. And this is really important for mums, I think, as well, in particular, is how do you want to work at a practical level? You know, are you wanting to work full-time, part-time, hybrid, fully from home? Do you want to be in a job share? Do you want to be 5 days a week? Do you want to be able to take extended periods off if possible over the summer? How much do you need to earn? You know, do you mind if you have a commute? Does it have to, would you like to be traveling, not traveling? So some of the practical stuff. So all those puzzle pieces is where I start with my clients to try and create a picture of what they want.
Yeah, fantastic, because very often it is difficult to do it by ourselves. We are inside our head, and just to have coach or mentor who can kind of give us that bird's eye view and show us what it looks like from your point of view, from the outside point of view, I think that's just a healthy picture. So that's great.
What's interesting about working with a coach or even with a friend, you don't have to, you know, if you don't have the budget to work with a coach, getting someone else to do this for you is that by doing this with someone, even just talking and letting someone listen and then getting them to reflect back what they noticed, which is essentially what a lot of coaching is, it's really powerful. Because you can go round and round in circles and you never notice certain things until your coach or your friend or whoever says, you do realize that when you were talking about that role you had when you were 17, you know, delivering papers or whatever, you just, your energy shifted enormously and you were suddenly really passionate, you know, or they say, you do realize when you spoke about your current job that you used the word freedom or control or, you know, you used it like four times and they're like, did I, you know, and someone noticing things up to you is what's really helpful, because sometimes you just can't see the wood for the trees. You can't see what themes are emerging, but there often are themes and different energy levels that are visible to other people that you've lost sight of because you're so in the thick of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you work with mums, I know that many of your clients are mums. What do you notice that is normally most difficult for them? Like when it comes to deciding the next step forward, one thing I believe from what we were saying is clarity, just clarity, even what I want, what I don't want. But what else?
I think there are probably two elements of this and that are particularly pertinent to mums. And I don't want to generalize because this isn't the case for everyone. And it often depends on what kind of setup you have at home and what your partner does and things. I think on the one hand, as mums, we suddenly feel, or a lot of mums feel, that they can't just please themselves. I mean, that's motherhood generally, isn't it? So the decision becomes more complicated by your practical reality of how old are my kids? What time do they need from me? You know, what finances do I have around my childcare? You know, what are my options around flexible working? So I think the actual practicalities of work, as we know, for mums become huge. There are financial implications. We know there are motherhood penalties at work, you know, that your chances for promotion and things are often badly impacted by becoming a mum. Luckily, we've just seen these changes here in the UK around flexible working and your rights around that. But that has been a massive challenge for mums. So I think there are very practical considerations. So a lot of mums might want to, in an ideal world, do certain things, but immediately feel the constraints of their reality. So it's exploring that, because sometimes that is very much real constraints. But also, of course, with mums, there's quite a lot of mindset stuff goes on. I think particularly for mums who've taken time out. I think that's the other thing for mums with career change or any sort of career development is we haven't had that unbroken, very linear journey that men will have had. So we've often stepped away either just for maternity leave or for an extended period of a career break as we've spent time raising family. And the thing I hear from a lot of women, particularly those who've spent 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years out of the workplace, out of the formal workplace. We all know they're working extremely hard. But is that sense of, oh gosh, my confidence has just kind of plummeted. I'm not sure who I am. I'm not sure what value I bring. How do I explain the gap in my employment? So that's a particular challenge for women who've taken a career break, some of which is mindset, is that sense of I've lost my confidence. Actually, I do find for a lot of women who then get back into work, you know, 4 weeks in, 4 months in, they're like, gosh, it's like I was never away. And the confidence does come back. But to make the jump sometimes feels really, really challenging. So I think for mums, there's that strange mix of confidence being a little bit wobbly, identity being a little bit wobbly, and some very practical challenges around how we work and how we make that function around family life.
I cannot agree more. I mean, what I noticed in my experience, what became so prominent, is how the aspect of passion or that inner fire really have been affected by motherhood. So I've always identified myself as someone who is change maker at heart, who loves starting things, making difference for women, helping them build worth and things like this. But then, and after being coach for years, when I became mom, something happened to me, something really shifted. And I started to completely reorganize my value system and my perception around the role of passion now, after motherhood, let's say, in how I want to then shape or contribute to my family, whether that passion is just non-negotiable ingredient of my future path or not. Because what you said earlier about what may be difficult for moms to change is actually considering completely new aspects. Yes, because one thing is practicality, another thing is clarity, understanding what's happening to us, but actually really understanding what living in alignment with our new values actually would look like now, because there are new values. So if you value family right now, what would that look like? And what if passion is just equally important to you? Could that be just as a passion project, or passion needs to be incorporated into your career? So I started to question that, because, you know, I think over the past years, since the boom of online entrepreneurship and turn your passion into career or purpose. And so we've been fed by those messages. So I've developed this kind of idea that if I have business or any career that is not passion-based, is not worth even pursuing. Like, what kind of life it is if it's not passion-based, yes? So I think that's something that motherhood challenged in me. And I feel that there are many moms who battle certain ideas because they don't want to feel better about themselves that, oh, you have great potential. Why? If they don't do that, they may feel that they undermine the potential because the world is telling them that they are more than they are. and you know,
yeah,
so I think there's
a little bit
around certain maybe common myths or something that you've noticed that around the role of passion in finding your new career path, for example.
Yeah, and I will come to that. But just before, I just wanted to say one thing, because I was really interested in what you just said there about how your own journey shifted. And it just struck me that one of the things we want to do as mums when it comes to our career is to check in often. Because as I heard you talking, I thought you talked about how this affects my career path, as if that path is one journey. I think as mums, actually, because the stage that our children are at shifts so much and what it requires from us shifts so much, that actually there's real value for us as mums to kind of not try and think for the next 20 years, but to think perhaps in smaller chunks for the next 2 years or 3 years or 5 years. Because actually what feels a massive priority at the moment, what we have the energy for or the excitement for at the moment, and how we want to balance work and family at the moment, can shift again in 3 or 4 years. So it just struck me that, yeah, that will continue, I'm afraid, that shift. And how you feel about it now might look different to how you feel about it in 5 years. So we all want to kind of keep revisiting this and knowing that it can change. We're not making one decision now for the whole of time. But anyway, passion, yes. What an interesting one. And I do sometimes worry. It feels like quite a new concept, doesn't it? I mean, certainly back in the day, you just worked, you know, in the local factory or in the local farm, and no one said, what's your passion? It was just like, this is the work that's available nearby. And there was honour in just doing it and earning a wage. And I'm not saying it was much fun, and I'm not saying that was very fulfilling, but we had very different expectations of our work. The purpose of our work was to fill our day, earn us money, you know, and if you enjoyed it, you were perhaps luckier than most. But I do worry sometimes that we've gone the other way and that we've put so much weight into our jobs for whatever reason, maybe because we spend so much time in them now. And they're, you know, we feel if we're going to have hours and hours a week doing something, we've got to love it. But I think perhaps that has skewed the perspective slightly, that therefore we have certain people who found the wonderful, magical thing that they love, and their jobs are just like, you know, dancing with fairies, and it's all magic and great, which cannot be true. I mean, even people who are very happy in their jobs are going to have days that are dull. No job has is totally free of elements that are boring or that are a little bit uninspiring or that are tiring or that mean you have to stay late. Very few jobs anyway. So we don't want to create this thing of you either find a job you love or you might as well not bother because your job is meaningless. I think there are many ways that jobs can serve us. And for some people, yes, obviously, if you can align your job in some way to what you're interested in and what you care about, then great. But for some people, their job is actually it pays the bills. You know, actually, I want a job that's very low stress and doesn't engage me that much because I want to spend my time, you know, wild camping at the weekends. So actually, I'm going to set up a job scenario that just works for me massively on a practical level because it's so flexible. I can do it from anywhere because I like to travel, whatever it is. And they keep the two separate. They don't make the jump of going, therefore, because I love travel, I need to make my job into travel. They just say, I'm going to find a job that's good enough, that's enjoyable enough, but that on a practical level allows me to do this stuff in my free time. So I think there's lots more to it. It's more complex. And I think it's very individual. It's not find the one thing that you love and turn it into a job necessarily. That can work and it's worth looking at. But I think the idea that that is the holy grail and that makes you better than other people and makes your job more valuable.
I can imagine you have clients who, by working with you, realize that their next step could be setting a business because they develop passion for something. Or very often motherhood is a beautiful catalyst for becoming coach. Many of my guests are actually matchmaking coaches, coaches for moms, or organizers of any sort of communities for moms or circles. That's been actually on my mind as well. So I think going back to what you said earlier, there is an element that you don't have to completely start as a blank canvas. You really almost like design that new direction based on everything that you are in a way. So, but if there is someone who is kind of at the crossroads, they kind of know that they don't belong to career they are still currently at. They have some sort of ideas, but perhaps they want to clarify their interests or passion. Can you share any sort of like tools or maybe exercise, something that they could do to explore the ideas, interests and passion?
Yeah, there's perhaps two stages to it. I think sometimes people come, they're like, I don't have a passion. I don't know what excites me. Because actually sometimes when you're a busy parent, you know, the idea of hobbies and things has gone out the window. You've got no free time and you perhaps have lost sight of that. So I have an exercise. I'm very happy to share the link with you. Lovely. Called 7 Ways to Explore Your Passions. I probably should call it interests, not passions, because as I say, that word passions is a bit loaded. It creates a massive expectation that a passion has to be something that you kind of can't live without and you want to do every day. But it's a series of questions inviting people to look in other parts of their life. So things like, and this is a classic coaching question around, you know, what did you like doing as a kid? What did you enjoy in your childhood? What were your hobbies? And looking there, not because you say, well, I liked BMX riding and therefore I should go and, you know, design BMX tracks. Of course, it's not as simple as that. But it's thinking, well, was it because I loved the outdoors? Was it because I loved being part of a team? Was it because I loved fixing my bike or my roller skates or whatever it was? And trying to tap into often what's behind that initial interest or passion. Because the danger with a passion is we find it and go, well, I love baking. And then you say, well, you should become a chef. But of course, actually, I think that's far too simplistic, because you may love baking because it's the only time in the day you have to listen to podcasts. So actually, it's less about the baking and more about the podcasts. Or, you know, you may love being in a hockey team and you've joined your local hockey team. You do that at the weekends because actually you're the person who devises the training program. And that's the bit you love playing hockey, yes. But actually, the thing that really lights you up is every week saying to people, right, this is how we're going to structure the training. So actually, that's not telling you to go and teach people hockey. It's telling you that you're a really gifted trainer, that you're great at designing programs to develop people. And that could be used in so many different ways. So I think starting with the obvious, but not stopping with the obvious, trying to think, what does this passion or interest tell me? So that can be a really good way to start exploring. The second bit, and I think this is a crucial part of career change, whether you're talking about a passion or any kind of idea, mm-hmm. is to get out there and explore it. You can't think your way into a career change. You can't just think, well, let me think a little bit more about this particular idea I've got of being a graphic designer. Let me just Google a bit more about graphic design. you've got to get out there and talk to people who are graphic designers, or go and have a cup of coffee with your, you know, your friend's friend who's a nurse, because you're thinking about nursing, because Google will not tell you if you're going to like this career. So talking to people, experimenting. I had a call with a client today who mentioned that one of the things she was thinking about was an element of design to do with book covers. And so she's interested in art and illustration. And I challenged her a little bit because I said, so what are you doing in that space at the moment? Obviously, I'm not expecting her to be designing and selling book covers. Of course not. She's just thinking about it. But I said, how often are you drawing? Have you ever tried designing a book cover? And she looked at me a bit blankly, as if to go, well, not really. And to me, immediately, I'm like, well, you got to try it, even on a tiny little micro scale. You know, if you think you'd like to be a declutterer, or you'd like to be a, you know, professional wardrobe tidier, you can't just sit and think about that and just try and decide. You need to say to a friend, right, this weekend, I want to come around and declutter your wardrobe with you, because you'll soon find out if it's fun or not, or whether you're like, oh my gosh, that was a nightmare. Yeah. I can't work with these difficult people who don't want to implement my system.
If I can add, I think what you just shared is such a powerful tip. And I agree, it's very important. You say about wardrobe, because you know what? I actually, my first business was a personal stylist. So I love the idea of empowering women through style. And referring to what you just said, when I started doing it, very soon I noticed how much energy I lose in those private consultations, or running around shops picking clothes, and then just did not know until I started doing it how much energy sucking exercise it is for me. And this was one of the key reasons why I just dive away from that, and then obviously into coaching. But so important. Also, another thing, I remember when I had the episode when I was working in human resources, but I was looking into mentoring and coaching aspect of HR, and I wanted to find out what would the work in kind of learning development L&D look like. And what I did, I literally reach out to people on LinkedIn, requesting some like LinkedIn coffees, chats, just to get insight about the job, what that should look like. And that is exactly going out and doing that research, which you said, I found this powerful. And what I also found that actually people genuinely want to help. I've noticed that I received more of offers, more like responses to my requests from actually top directors rather than any sort of like, you know, mid managers. So that was also surprise to me, but I think, yeah, definitely this is about going out. And I think you beautifully also mentioned this in your book. I think there was a great quote just about what we are talking about now, that career doesn't happen like in your room or something, that you need to go out.
Oh yeah, I think I, yeah, it's yeah that you can't change career from behind a sofa. I think, you know, yes, you can't, you know, Google. Yeah, people try and do it all, and because it's safe and because it's not challenging, you know, they try and do it all from their desk, you know, in their lunch hour on their phone looking. And I always laugh because I think people who've been thinking about a career change for a long time, I bet if they're the kind of person who leaves tabs open on their browser, which is me, I'm afraid, you would find the same 10 tabs have been open for the last 6 months, because they're just going around, and every so often they just go back to that website about a particular training course, or they go back to that article about, you know, what it takes to become a, you know, HR manager. But that's all they do. And they think that somehow going back to that website in 3 months, it's going to tell them something different to what they told them, you know, when they last looked. I'm afraid it's not. The only way you can move yourself on is by talking to people, trying things, testing out your ideas, because you need to be more interactive. It needs to be a much more active process. And I think people get scared by that because they think they're committing. But actually, if you can keep those investigative actions quite small, quite low cost, you know, just if you think you're interested in, you know, web development, you don't have to sign up for a £3,000 year's course. You know, you just need to say, I'm going to go to a taster session at my local FE college on a Friday night for the next, you know, next weekend. It's like at least dip a toe in. And I think sometimes people are scared because they don't want to find it's the wrong thing. But there's an irony in that, because it just means they never find anything. In a way, striking stuff off your list is as powerful as adding something on. You know, it's far better that you discover that you don't want to be a personal stylist, and you discover it early on, or you discover that actually, you know, working in procurement is really dull. You discover that by doing some really small experiments, by talking to some people, And then you can strike it off and you can move on and say, okay, I've decided this, but this door is still open. So I'm now going to go and look at that one. So it needs to be a really curious process, a really exploratory process, and hold it lightly, you know, have some fun with it. Don't feel like I'm trying to make a decision in the next 2 minutes. It's like,
yeah, and this is powerful mindset. Exactly. What you're saying is mindset. Yes.
Yeah.
That's what you need to approach it. That's great. The conversation, love it. What else I wanted to ask you is, yeah, we already were talking about this, but yeah, you said something in your book that career design is more of an art than a science.
This is sad news, I think. People often, when they come to me, they think it's a science because I'm a career coach. They think if they feed me certain information, I will draw a very deep breath and look at them and say, Gosha, you've told me everything. I can tell you that you need to be a librarian. You know, they think that there's a kind of, if they put in the right information, it will spit something out. And yes, there are programs, you know, I did one at school. I remember doing a big long questionnaire. And yeah, there are some valuable tools, you know, personality profiles and things that can guide you. But I'm afraid there is no sausage machine where you feed in information. It spits out the exact job title and the exact company and the organization that you need to work for. So I think when I say it's an art, not a science, so although I say to people, I think there's evidence that it is a meshing of your interests and your strengths and how you want to work and your values, for example. But even that, it's an art form, because for some people, those pieces won't be equal. It's not like it's 25% this and 25% that. You know, some people say, actually, for me, it's got to be 70% my interest. It's got to be that I love politics and my job absolutely has to involve politics. So that's an art. That's them saying, actually, I'm prepared to skew that bit more. I don't mind what I'm doing in politics. It doesn't have to be playing to my strengths. I'm happy, you know, making the tea or devising a new software program, even though I don't love that, because I'm in the right place. For other people, they'll want to skew a different bit and say, for me, work is all about my values. It's about this value I have of contribution and service and helping people. I don't mind too much how I do it, but that has to be there. So again, I'm afraid it's not scientific. It's like starting with these building blocks, but being prepared to move them about, to put them in different configurations, to throw the odd one away if you want to, because you've got to get to know what's important to you and what work means and what success means to you, because that is so important as well. We carry so many expectations, perhaps from other people in our lives, from society, about what a successful career looks like. Sometimes we have to be ready to rip that up and go, that does not interest me. Well, that is not the definition I'm going with here, at least for now. Even if it's for the next 5 years, success is a different thing for me. It might look different when my kids are going to secondary school or whatever it is, but being prepared to, yeah, think of it as an art form with a lot of paint and splattering around, and it's not just sitting in a computer feeding stuff in and getting a magic answer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I get that feeling that this logical and more like rational approach, but still being in tune with yourself and how it feels. Because one of the things actually on my list is how to identify what kind of difference you want to make. And before we chat about this, what triggered really your career change? Because I think you mentioned somewhere that you just like quite asking interesting questions. Was it about that? So can you tell a little bit around that? Because I'm really curious, because another aspect for many people is like what things feel like. Some people can do vision boards and tap more into that aspect of receiving answers they need. What was your story around?
Yeah, so for me, you're right. This was when we were chatting previously. I was talking about what made the shift from journalism into coaching, because the two are linked. Me going back to that idea of those threads, there isn't the skill set is similar. It's around listening and questioning and analysis that you use as a journalist and that I also use as a coach. Yeah. But I think the reason that I lost my sense of meaning perhaps in the journalism that I was doing, and this is not true at all, I'm not casting aspersions on journalism, it's a brilliant profession, but the presenting work I was doing, the tipping point for me was covering Brexit and all the run-up to Brexit, which of course went on for 2 years.
Yeah.
That the skill set that I brought, the eager journalist in me who loved asking questions and digging and trying to find, you know, truths and interesting things, I got very demoralized by the fact that when I was covering Brexit, and we were covering it every day, every time I was on show, that I got to a point where, you know, they would roll in all these politicians to interview. And I got fed up, because even if I asked really lovely open questions, if I didn't have an agenda, I wasn't trying to catch people out, you know, I'm not Jeremy Paxman, I wasn't on Newsnight, I just wanted to explore a subject. But of course, all I get back is the party line, whichever party, or the particular kind of prepared answer. It was all a lot of spin and, you know, brand messaging. And of course, I'm not naive. That is what a lot of politics is. But that started to take the shine off it for me, because it lost meaning. And I think for a lot of people, it's searching for that meaning in their work. So for me, I wanted to make the shift, because for coaching, I'm still asking people questions. We're still digging around. We're still finding stories. But these are people who want to answer, who are keen. It's a partnership. They're saying, OK, help me here. Yeah, that's a good question. Let me think about it. No, when you're a journalist, nobody says, that's a really fascinating question. Let me really give some new thought to that. They're just going to roll out the answer they already had. So, yeah, it was that sense of what am I feeling about my work and whether it has meaning. And I liked your point about where you're tapping into when you're trying to sense what is and isn't right for you. One of the things I do in my book is an exercise inviting people to use all three of their brains. And it sounds a bit woo-woo, but, you know, there is proper neuroscience. We think that all of the thinking goes on in our heads, and that we're very logical, and we must do all of the decision-making about our careers through our heads, through our logical brains. But actually, we have neurons and neurotransmitters and in other parts of our bodies, like our gut and our heart. Go away and Google it if you're interested. It's really fascinating, isn't it, Gosha? And so actually being able to experiment a little bit with how you feel in your gut and how you respond to ideas you've got about a career shift, and how you feel in your heart. So that kind of sense of, how engaged am I? Does this light me up? Does this feel like that warm feeling in my gut? Do I feel settled about this idea? Do I feel uneasy about it? What's that telling me? Because it's trying to tell you something. Your body is a very sophisticated creature, and it might not be able to get the messages through to you brilliantly, but there is something to learn from bits of you other than your head.
Absolutely. And I think we are holistic beings, mind, body, form a system. Yeah. You can't impact one without impacting another. But that's probably for completely another conversation. But one thing is, okay, knowing, but another thing is actually having confidence or courage to actually listen to it or follow it. So yeah, like you said, it's very complex, actually. It's very complex. And that's why you were actually even saying in your book that any sort of a career change can take time. It's not one week process. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think I always look for the stats, and of course it's not something you can measure that easy, but often people say anywhere between kind of 6 months and 2 years, depending on, you know, especially if you're going to retrain, that could take you 3 or 4 years. And I'm not saying that doesn't have to be the essence of every career change. I don't want to put people off. Some of them happen quicker, but certainly if you combine the thinking and the exploration and then the actual transition period, it's something that you kind of want to invest in for the long term, for the long haul. And I don't mean that as it's a slog. It can be a really exciting process, but it's often a transition, and building that into your thinking as well, that you maybe, it's not one day you stop necessarily a career and the next day you start the new one. There might be that period where you're building something up or upskilling in some way, ready. So yeah, it's a longish process. And I think, again, mindset wise, knowing that and embracing that from the beginning, realizing that's not because you're doing something wrong, that's just because it's going to take time. Again, that kind of commitment is something you need, and factoring it in and being ready to kind of commit some energy and time to it is important.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just understanding to what extent meaning right now is for you important versus practicality versus other aspects. I feel that I've found right now configuration that serves me for where I am right now, in the present. So I definitely see that just living more in the present moment is very true for me these days, as opposed to what was before. And if my need, for example, was to do something meaningful, I can find the outlet by doing podcasts, for example. But if my situation required me to right now bring some financial contribution, I found another way to do that through different business projects. I feel I have more of, I guess, acceptance maybe for what my life looks like now, what is needed, rather than battling with it. It's more like collaboration, cooperation. That's how I see it. And that is something that I think motherhood just really challenged, because before, I have impression that before you become mom, you just have those ideas. You just like, you don't have many things that you need to worry about like you have now. So it looks different. It looks a little bit in the air, like a fairy tale. But I think it's good to just listen to yourself and what's true to you and stand in that truth. Anyways, that's really great conversation. I really appreciate all those insights. And I would like to finish this episode with the question I love asking my guests, because for me, it just shows that fire inside them and what sets them on fire. And this is about TED Talk. If you were invited and share a message with the world, idea worth sharing, what would that be, Rachel?
Yeah, this is such an interesting question. And I don't have a whole TED Talk worked up, but it's something for me. I need to. So don't steal this idea, anyone. It's my TED Talk. I need to do some work on it. It's probably already been done. I think for me, it's around potential. That potential is not something that is confined to the young. I think it's really fascinating that for many of us, we don't hear the word potential beyond the age of about 12 or 13. You know, when you're a kid at school, teachers say to your parents, oh, yes, you know, little Sally's got great potential as an athlete, or, you know, little Johnny's got great potential in his maths. That idea that we have room to grow and develop and turn into something. And what I notice is that that seems to somehow tail off, that nobody when you're 30 says you've got great potential, you know, that it's almost like, well, you're fixed now. You don't have the opportunity to grow. But what I see now, and a lot of my clients are, you know, in their 40s and 50s, these are people who are looking to work for another 20, 30 years. These people do have potential. They have loads of skills already, but they still have the ability to grow and change and acquire new skills and develop into something else. So for me, it's something around, you know, where does potential go to die? We seem to have decided that potential dies off at the age of 16, maybe 21 if you're lucky, you know. But once you're through uni, your potential is kind of rapidly diminishing. And I want to kind of find the potential graveyard and kind of start going, we're not burying potential at the time you finish your first job. We're hanging on to it. We're saying that even people who are 45 or 60 or 70 have potential, and we can tap into it.
I love it. I love it. And I am absolutely a big fan of it. I do think the older I am, I'm 41 now. The older I am, the more I see that actually the wisdom, the maturity, that potential that comes from really understanding yourself even more, even better, and those values, changing values. Oh, that is just so enriching. And I feel that the actual real unfolding, let's say, of that potential happens actually, but probably at least 40 plus, I mean, after 40s and 50s and 60s. So when I see people who do great things, or they are on that discovery journey, self-discovery in the second half of life, I think that is so, so inspiring. And just, I have such as my heart is smiling to seeing it. You know, it's beautiful, and I hope and I wish this for myself, for everyone, really, to actually keep unfolding, keep seeing what's next, what's there to discover. I think that's fascinating. Yeah, for me, definitely. So thank you for sharing this.
You'll listen to my TED Talk if I write it.
No, it's beautiful. It's great, motivating message. Rachel, thank you so much for your time. I really enjoy it. Can you tell us also where our listeners can find you?
Yeah, so probably the best place to start is my website, because also if people want to find that free resource I talked about, seven yes. ways to explore your passions, you can find that there easily. So that is www.rachelschofield.co.uk. Otherwise, I am on Instagram, Not very active at the moment, I confess, but I'm on Instagram at Rework Your Life, all one word, and I'm on LinkedIn under Rachel Schofield. So wherever you choose to.
Yeah, I will link everything in episode notes.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, wishing you all the best. Keep helping your beautiful clients, you know, find the most fulfilling careers for them, the best that they want, really, for them. And yeah, keep changing the world. Thank you so much.
I love it. I don't know if I'm changing the world, but I'm changing.
Yes, definitely.
Corner of it.
For the time.
Thank you. Lovely talking to you.
Lovely. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me, Mama. If you enjoyed this episode, I would love for you to leave me a review and subscribe to be notified when the next episode drops. If you would like to connect with me, you can find me over at Instagram, where my handle is at firestartermom. Looking forward to see you back here soon for the next chat. Bye for now.